Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd. It's Season 8, Episode 14. And Dave, we got some news today. It's Wednesday. Obviously, the Steelers play exhibition game number 4, their final exhibition game in Carolina tomorrow against the Panthers. But that's kind of taken a backseat to the news that happened yesterday. Mike Tomlin had his press conference, and the Steelers made a deal for Vance McDonald, a second-round pick in 2013 out of Rice, a tight end for the 49ers. That's the story that's dominating the Steelers camp. How are you? Do you care at all about the game Thursday? I know you do. And what do you think of the deal?
Yeah, you know, this fourth and final the preseason finale is you know, but we got to – there's still roster spot or two open. Possibly, but I'm willing to bet the Steelers have a pretty good idea of what their 53 is going to look like right now. Of course, injuries can happen. The biggest thing right now is you want whatever starters do play in this game, hopefully not to have to play a lot. And of course, you're back. You just want to come out injury free and knock on wood. It's been, a tremendous offseason for the Steelers when it comes to overall health. Sure, there's been a lot of players that missed some practice time, training camp time, but for the most part, this is a healthy team. So, oh yeah, absolutely, I'll be watching it. We'll chart it like we do everything else, and you and I will have to talk about it afterwards, whether you like it or not. But the deal, coming out of training camp, all throughout training camp, and specifically after training camp was over, Alex and I were talking on the special edition podcast, and I think someone tweeted out a question, what position could you see the Steelers adding, either via trade or free agency before the season starts? And, it was an easy choice, tight end or possibly cornerback. And when you look at this tight end group on paper, even entering training camp, and especially since they had dumped Ladarius Green, it's a very unappealing group on paper overall. And to see them go out and add a guy like Vance McDonald, not a sexy guy. A lot of people probably had to hit the Google machine real quick as soon as that deal happened, but if you go back and you watch his tape, and I don't know if you've seen the post that we've done on Steelers Depot, myself and Alex Kozora, this is an entertaining tight end, a tight end that can stretch the field for you, a tight end that you can play on the end of the line of scrimmage. You can line him up in the slot. He can get downfield in a hurry. He can block. And are there issues with his hands? Has he had some drops since being in the NFL? Absolutely, he has. But if you look at some of these drops and how they happen, a few of them running, trying to run with the football before having his head turned. A few others, I think, kind of deeper down the field. Some in traffic, if you will. Not a bad ad, and the good thing is about his contract is, it's not going to be a burden on the Steelers. They can cut him basically at any time past this season, so it's hard. We'll get into a little bit more in depth on McDonald as we go throughout the show, but it's really hard. In my opinion, it's a no-risk ad when it comes to McDonald, and it can only, help the team, and if he ends up not working out this season, you just dump them before April 1st.
Yeah, a couple things going on here. One is the Steelers didn't give up anything to get them. Whatever you think of the 49ers, let's say they finish in the bottom 10 of the league. The Steelers finish in the top 10 of the league. We're talking about a max difference of, a max difference of 20 draft spots. It could be, they could be very close. If the 49ers are in the bottom 5 and the Steelers are winning the Super Bowl, those things get awfully tight. So, they gave up some spots in the draft to take a look at this guy. Now, what Mike Tomlin said, as you point out, is, look, we've gotten JV performance from our tight ends as a position group. Now, what's interesting here to me, Dave, is to me my first reaction to that is that's pretty much most impactful on the commentary on Jesse James. Now, it goes through the whole group, but David Johnson is what he is. I mean, David Johnson is a blocking tight end who's always been seen as that. And I've said it before on the podcast, is I was surprised they brought him back just because I feel like David Johnson was a guy they can find almost as an undrafted free agent. There are guys like David Johnson out there. Obviously, he knows the system, and obviously, and it should be noted that he is very inexpensive. Because of his tenure in the league and vet minimum and all that. So it didn't cost the Steelers anything. So it's kind of the guy they bring back. Okay, so you can understand it because it's a no-risk move with him. We've talked extensively about Grimble in the last podcast. So to me, this is a little bit of a damnation of Jesse James, but I don't see Jesse James being anything different than we've expected all along. I think Jesse James took a step forward last year, both as a blocker and a receiver. He's never going to be, one of the best tight ends in the league. He's never going to be Heath Miller, but he is what he is. But he's also probably not a number one tight end at the end of the day. That's why the Steelers signed Ladarius Green. They're different players, but, Ladarius Green was supposed to be the guy. And this goes back to the whole question of, why did they cut Ladarius Green when they did, and why did they not draft a tight end? George Kittle. And ironically, the Vance McDonald, George Kittle being drafted by the 49ers allowed the 49ers to trade Vance McDonald to the Steelers. Because if you look at the 49ers depth chart at tight end, they've got George Kittle's now. They're going to be, that looks like they're starting tight end. And everybody knows Dave's man crush on George Kittle and all the work he did pre-draft on him. They signed Logan Paulson from the Bears last season, who was, of course, with Washington all the time. And he's kind of a blocking tight end. He's not a huge pass catching tight end. And then they have Garrett Celek, Brett Celek's younger brother, who was Chip Kelly coached now both of them. He was in Philadelphia and then in San Francisco. Celek he's been around the league a long time. He was a free agent in 2012 out of Michigan State. And Celek has kind of gone from a non pass catching, non playing tight end to a guy who is Vance McDonald. I mean, he's been around. He's probably a little better blocker, but probably has a little better hands. And there was too many guys. And they have Blake Bell, who they drafted, the former quarterback / tight end / running back for Oklahoma. The guy who ran the power offense for Oklahoma out of the quarterback position as another tight end on their roster. So they had too many guys. Somebody was going to get cut, and it was McDonald. And I don't know if you want to call McDonald Ladarius Green light. When he catches the ball, he's gotten yardage. He's been effective, using the middle of the field. But he's somewhere in between the guys the Steelers have. But to me, Dave, he kind of immediately becomes 1B on the Steeler depth chart right out of the chute. So that was a lot of stuff to throw out there. But what are your thoughts?
You had to throw George Kittle in there, didn't you?
I had to give you George Kittle, man. I had to give it to you.
Because of that, I'll quote George Taylor from the 1968 movie Planet of the Apes. "You maniacs, you blew it up. Oh, damn you. God damn you all to hell."
Which is, why wasn't George Kittle? Obviously, he went off the board before the Steelers had their fifth round pick, but obvious question.
We could have circumvented all this, but obviously we probably wouldn't have Joshua Dobbs, but we'll see how that works out. Look, I'm over that now. But back to your point. What have we said? Or at least what have I said, since Jesse James was drafted? This guy is a more of a mixture of maybe Heath Miller and Matt Spaeth combined, with the more leaning towards the Matt Spaeth end of it, because he's obviously bigger. I don't see how anybody thought all along that that Jesse James could be a true number one guy, an all around tight end, a guy that's going to catch you 50 to 60 passes a year.
I don't think anybody has thought that.
Okay. Well, I mean, he's not. Okay. Right. It should be clear at this point. The worst thing I think right now with Jesse James, and especially this preseason, is still the wild inconsistency in his game. That's concerning. Not a great game the other night against the Colts. Missed some blocks on the edge. Of course, had a communication error, I think, that might have been on his fault that led to the early Roethlisberger sack. Just not on the details, if you will. And this is a guy that should get it by now in his third year here. Now,
there's no doubt his play led to the trade. His play in that game led to the trade.
Right. Well, because, I mean, look, Xavier Grimble's not going to the Pro Bowl, but he played a much better game against the Colts. Now, with that said, a lot of inconsistencies. You know, the fact that we had to talk about it, and then now we're talking after the fact that, boy, what a huge difference that was, let you know that he's been on both sides of the, of the line. Drastic when it comes to his play. I don't think you can count on him as a number one. So I think you just said that McDonald instantly becomes 1B, and I will agree with that. I think week one he's going to be 1B, but that's only because he's his newness to the team right now. I think after the first week or two, I think you're going to flip-flop, and I think you're going to see him be your 1A, and then Jesse James go back to a role that fits him best, and that's being the second the second tight end on this team. David Johnson, the bad thing in all this is David Johnson's been the team's best tight end all offseason, and this is a guy that might catch you two passes all year. So what does that tell you right there? I don't think he's going anywhere because of the sheer fact that he can be a number three for you, and he can also function as a backup fullback to Roosevelt Nix. He still gives you a little something on special teams. So I think this trade hurts, and we'll see how many tight ends they keep. But if they're going to dump one, you would think, at least to me, that Xavier Grimble is the guy that should be the most worried right now.
So I tweeted out yesterday that I want to pull up exactly what I said so they get it right here. Okay, so the acquisition of Vance McDonald doesn't bode well for somebody. I'm not sure if it's David Johnson, David Grimble, Fitz, Nile, DHB, but somebody's out. I've talked to some people kind of, in the know in the organization, and they don't feel like it will be a tight end who is the odd man out here. So, Dave, let's take that premise as being true. You just made your thoughts on if it is, it's Grimble, and it's kind of hard for me to disagree with that because David Johnson, unless they decide that, they want to run those, the extra tackle sets with Chris Hubbard, or somebody else, Hawkins obviously would be the other choice. And they haven't done a lot of that in the preseason. We've seen it do it in the past out of necessity. But let's say they choose not to have that be a feature of their offense, so they don't move a tight end. Well, I was suggesting, not advocating, suggesting that they would carry four running backs, and I thought that was the case. Well, now all of a sudden, it feels like they could be, we've had conversations about six receivers and almost made it a given. So it's either going to be five receivers or three running backs if you're going to stay with 25 guys on the offensive side of the ball. Is one of Nile Davis, Fitzgerald Toussaint, and Darius Heyward-Bey, who might have made the team if Jesse James had a good preseason, are they now going to get cut?
Let me answer your question with a question. What you foresee at best Xavier Grimble being number three tight end with McDonald in the fold now, right? At best, Grimble's number three.
Well, at worst, he's number three because it comes back to skill sets and what you're trying to do. I mean, Xavier Grimble brings something that the other three guys, he brings a higher level as a pass catcher, clearly, than the other three guys. Now, Vance McDonald brings, I think, more of that skill set than Jesse James. He's a better pass catcher than Jesse James. But I still think Grimble's upside in that part of the game is the best, and that's why I don't think he's number three tight end. On first down, maybe, but on passing downs, no. And we know how often there are passing downs.
Well, let me tell you this. You really need to go watch and see a little bit. Go watch those games against Miami, New England, and I'm trying to think who else in the middle of the season there on McDonald. He can get down the field, David.
Yeah, no, I called him Darius Green Light. I mean, he can work the middle of the field.
Yeah, and my point being is okay, if Xavier Grimble is number three out of four tight ends, but David Johnson can double as a fullback for you and is a better blocker than Grimble. What Grimble doesn't give you, if Grimble's gonna dress on game day, I mean, are you really going to dress four tight ends, okay? And if you do, what kind of snap counts does Grimble get on offense, and are you going to use him any on special teams?
Well, he's going to get exactly the same playing time Ladarius Green got. And Ladarius Green was only getting 20 plays a game in the six games he played, and he wasn't playing special teams. But that's exactly how I would expect to see Xavier Grimble used.
I disagree hugely. If you have Vance McDonald and Jesse James, and David Johnson, and let's assume they keep all four, and you're dressing all four of those guys, I think Grimble would be lucky to get five offensive snaps out of all that, because Vance McDonald can do a lot more things than Xavier Grimble can do. Yeah, he dropped four or five balls last year. Yeah, he dropped another five balls in 2015, but this guy had an average depth per target last year of just under 10 yards. Now, that might not seem like a big deal and a number worth throwing out there, but an average target depth of 10 yards for a tight end is a pretty big deal. Jesse James was under seven. Okay. And McDonald's just a better route runner. There is no way I can fathom that if you have four tight ends and if all four of them dress and all four of them remain healthy during the game, that Xavier Grimble is going to get any more than just a handful of snaps. And on top of that, he's not going to give you anything worth writing home about on special teams. Now, McDonald's not a huge special teams player either, but he's your 1A or 1B, and thus you're probably not going to expect much of him out of that area. Jesse James, of course, can give you something on special teams. And with him not having a full starter's role, a guy that's probably only going to go back into that tight end number two spot at 20 to 30 snaps a game or what have you, then he can give you some work on special teams. So regardless of what people think or say, me watching tape and thinking that I know what I think I know, I will be shocked if they keep all four of those tight ends, and B, if Grimble's not the odd man out. I mean, you can make an argument.
Let me ask you this: of the four guys that we just discussed, who would you cut, and who do you think gets cut?
Yeah, you could make an argument to cut Jesse James. You can make an argument to cut Xavier Grimble. You can make a good argument to cut David Johnson. You can make really good arguments. And
I agree. I agree with that.
You really could. And if you formulated the argument right, you can make a great argument for all three of those guys.
I mean, you could argue Vance McDonald, Jesse James is Vance McDonald like.
He can't get down the field like Vance can, David.
Meaning Vance McDonald's better than Jesse James.
Yeah, Vance McDonald.
And in fact, maybe there's nothing Jesse James does better than Vance McDonald.
Correct.
That would be the argument for cutting Jesse James. Because I can make the argument David Johnson's the best blocker of the group. I can make the argument that Xavier Grimble is the highest ceiling pass catcher of the group. what Jesse James has is he's pretty good at, you know, relative to the group, he's pretty good at both, but he's not the best at any of them. And if McDonald's better than both, yeah, you could make that argument. I don't think it'll happen, but you could make that argument.
Vance McDonald is a more consistent athletic version of Jesse James.
Yeah, that's I like that. Okay, so let me ask you this question. Okay, let's put all six guys in the mix. So McDonald's obviously making the team unless he's making the team. So there's six guys in play. Let's put them all in play. Jesse James, Xavier Grimble, David Johnson, Fitzgerald Toussaint, Nile Davis, and Darius Heyward-Bey. There was a situation where all six of those guys were making the team yesterday at this time. Vance McDonald has now taken a roster spot. Of those six guys, who would you cut if you had a choice today to cut one? Who do you think the Steelers will cut on Saturday or Sunday, whenever they announce these cuts?
Hey, I don't think Darius Heyward-Bey needs to be in that group because I think his spot, assuming he gets one, is special teams related more than anything. He's number 52 or 53. McDonald, in my opinion, has no bearing on him. Grimble, if we're going to chuck out a tight end out of the room, then he's my choice because
You don't have to see. I don't want you to narrow it by position. I want you to pick a guy out of those six.
All right, what were my choices?
The three tight ends currently on the roster, ex Vance McDonald, of course, DHB, who you've excluded, and the two running backs, Fitz and Nile Davis.
Yeah, but are you telling – I mean, I don't have to
– You got to cut one.
Man, I would probably cut Fitz if it came down to such a battle. You know,
I think it will. I mean, I think we're talking 26 offensive guys now.
I just don't think they're going to keep four running backs, David. I mean,
right. That's fine. So if you think Fitz is going to, you think Nile Davis is going to beat out Fitz?
I'm not sure how it's going to play out. I mean,
I want you to guess. We'll be on record here for Monday's podcast.
Well, I mean, you want to talk about a position that's very unappealing behind Le'Veon Bell. I mean, James Conner is the best option back there right now, to be quite honest with you. I mean, Nile Davis and Fitzgerald Toussaint really, I mean, they're just guys.
I agree. Listen, by the way, the answer is I think you're right. I think the Steelers will cut Fitzgerald Toussaint. I think he's going to be the guy who's the loser here in the Vance McDonald battle. I know you didn't think there were going to be four running backs, so that means you were excluding him anyway. But for me, because I felt like Fitz and now Davis were both going to make it, I think the addition of Vance McDonald cost Fitzgerald Toussaint his roster spot.
I understand the way that you're going with this, but the thing is I personally, I don't view that as being the one or group of players. You know, I think they were only.
Well, so let me ask you this: do you think they're going to keep 25? Do you think they'll keep more than 25 offensive players?
In my latest 53-man roster prediction, I have them keeping 25 offensive players, but I also had them keeping four running backs with Toussaint and Terrell Watson being three and four. Now, I'm obviously not married with that. I'm married to that.
Okay, no, so then for your group, you had cut Nile Davis already, so here's your group.
No. I kept Davis and I kept Terrell Watson.
Instead of Fitz being on the – take Fitz out of the equation, I'll ask you the question. So who loses their job, Nile Davis, Watson, DHB, or one of the tight ends? Well, you're going to have to change that 53. Who loses the job?
Right. The thing is that 53, I become unmarried to my 53s as soon as they hit the internet. deep down inside, do I think this team's going to keep four running backs regardless plus – Roosevelt Knicks? No. But that was what was in my 53-man roster. I think they're only going to keep three tight ends. I think they're going to keep six total wide receivers. So I think this is more of a tit for tat with the tight end position.
So now you, well So you just opened up a roster spot. So you just cut two guys in your thought. You just said three tight ends and three running backs, and your current 53, which I'm not holding you to, but your current tight end, your current 53 has four running backs and doesn't have Vance McDonald.
Right. I guess what you're telling me is asking me is how I would shake up my 53 right now with the addition of McDonald. I would add McDonald. I would cut Grimble, but I would also probably not keep both Watson and Davis. And that extra spot could go to a seventh cornerback, which would make a lot of our listeners happy if it was Brian Allen, something along those lines. Or, where else? You know, we'll see what the help.
A tenth linebacker. I mean, whatever.
Yeah, but look, I mean, another argument that's hard to get past is, should the Steelers seriously consider on keeping a ninth offensive lineman in Matt Filer, even though he's going to be inactive on, this is a guy that you that if you want to look for and not look at just position groups, but go across the team as far as guys that, you know, you want to keep your best players regardless of position and numbers. Matt Filer has made a strong, strong showing that he deserves to be on this team. And think about this, what's going to happen, you know, not that you should, but if you think about what's going to happen past 2017, you know, is Hubbard going to be gone? What's going to happen? You know, is BJ Finney, he should still be there, but I mean, is Ramon Foster going to be with this team? Could you use an experienced depth guy like Matt Filer past this year? But,
I think I look at Filer a lot like I look at Hubbard. I mean, we are talking about guys, you know, he's been around a little bit. He's clearly the ninth guy. If somebody takes him, God bless him. I mean, look, who was the kid from Vanderbilt, the Steelers drafted, who went to the Jets, Wesley Johnson. I mean, you know, we've seen it happen with guys with more pedigree that you get them to the practice squad, then somebody needs them. We saw it with Mihalik last year. I mean, you know, I'm not gonna lose any sleep about Filer, and I'm not gonna lose any sleep if somebody along the way decides that they want to have Matt Filer. I mean, you get a chance every year to reload. At the position, they've got most guys under contract for an extended term. They got Hawkins for a few more years, and so I'm not worried about him.
Yeah, back to the whole original thing here of wondering who the McDonald signing, who it probably affects the most. I understand the list of names that you tweeted out there. Personally, though, I think this is more of an indictment on the tight end group and.
It is the indictment, as Mike said, it's an indictment on the tight end group for sure. But the question now is if they decide to keep what they might not, as you said, maybe Grimble gets axed, small chance that Jesse gets axed. But if they do keep four tight ends, somebody else lost a job yesterday.
Right. And if you want me to go that route and force me to keep those four tight ends, then it's obviously going to come and if you look at my 53-man roster prediction specifically, it's probably going to cost a guy like Watson his job. But, I mean, was he really going to make it anyway? Or, you know, trying to think where else you could possibly cut there. You know,
it's hard to cut anybody on the defensive side of the ball with that addition.
Right, and I only have the team keeping nine total linebackers this time around. Now, I guess an argument can be made, and I think several have tried to make it on the site before. Do the Steelers really need to keep six defensive linemen this year?
Right, so then it would be, is it cost Maxey his job? You know,
right. But, you know, this team really likes to keep six defensive linemen and dress five of them on a weekly basis. Keep in mind, you still have to have seven inactive players every week. And I think you need to keep that in mind as well, too. Plus, you have to make sure that if someone trips coming off the bus, you know, you got somebody to dress, you know, over that guy as well, too.
So. All right, so let's move this forward a little bit because we got Paul Denner Jr. We didn't mention this up top. We're going to talk some Bengals today, and he's going to join us in about 10 minutes. Dave, just let's get the game out of the way. Quarterbacks, how are you going to split time? Is it going to be Landry Jones for 2.5, 3/4 and Josh Dobbs for the balance? Is that what you expect?
Yeah, I'd play Landry a half and I'd play Dobbs for a half. Plain and simple.
Running back, we talked about it. Watson will get a lot of carries, I imagine. Connor will get some opportunity to play running back. Will we see Fitz and Nile Davis as running backs in this game?
You know, on this short week, I don't know what the shape Fitz is with that leg contusion, but, it's all going to come down to in my opinion, you know who Fitz and Davis are right now. Both are just guys. So why not give Connor and Watson – some more time here. Nile Davis has 15 runs so far during the preseason. Five of them are successful runs, and another five have gone for zero or lost yardage. That guy likes to bump things outside, regardless of something's inside or not. And look, Fitzgerald Toussaint's not going to the Pro Bowl either. Both can give you pass protection. Both can return kicks for you as well, too. I want to see what Watson and James Conner can do. And who knows, maybe the third running back isn't even on the roster right now, David.
Oh, yeah. I think there's no chance of that. I think, you signed a free agent. You had a guy who's been with you for a couple of years, and you've got a guy who's looked good in camp. I can't imagine them going out and adding a guy to the 53. Will the starting defense play some in this game?
Boy, do you really have to see Cam Hayward or Stephon Tuitt right now?
You remember last year against Carolina, the defense played some. I mean, I don't know. Do you put you're going to have to play some of the secondary guys. I mean, is Cody Sensabaugh and Ross Cockrell and Artie Burns and Sean Davis, they're going to play some of this game?
Well, I think that those guys that are going after that bone still need to play.
Yep, I agree. I would definitely have not playing. I agree with you. Probably, I don't need to play Hayward, and I don't need to play Ryan Shazier. Everybody else is fair game.
Yeah, let's look back and see what snap totals were last year in that preseason finale here. Hargrave, well, he was a rookie then, so he needed to play. I don't think Tuitt or Hayward played, David. Let me see here. Timmons did not play in that game. Cameron Hayward did not play in that game. Stephon Tuitt did not play in that game. Shazier did not play in that game. William Gay did not play in that game. Mike Mitchell did not play in that game. Bud Dupree did not play in that game. Bud Dupree was banged up, though, so he wouldn't have played in that game.
Is playing. Watts is playing. Dupree is playing. They might not play the two defensive ends. I would assume the other guys are all going to play. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. Okay, so that's that. Let's get to Joe Hayden. That was the news of the morning. It came out yesterday. The Browns are trying to move Joe Hayden, for those who want to know. It turns out in a 5-year, $68 million extension that Hayden signed in 2014, he was owed $32.9 million non-guaranteed the next 3 years. So he was owed about $11.1 this year, I think, and about $10 million next year. The deal, obviously, if you trade for him, you get the contract. Nobody wanted to give up our sixth or seventh, which tells you something about, the level of play where people think Joe Hayden is. In fact, I heard people in the Browns camp talking that he was clearly the third best cornerback on the team. The Browns are going to, he's got a $4 million base salary of this year that was fully guaranteed. So the Browns get some cap relief, and there's a $4 million offset, Dave, which you can explain to our listeners how that affects how Hayden's going to look at the market.
Well, yeah, it goes back to kind of the Darrell Revis thing, that we talked about early in the offseason with the offset with him and the Jets. Here's the thing. $11 million Joe Hayden was set to earn this year, and you're telling me that on a team that has, what, $19 million in cap space, that you're going to cut loose, a guy of Joe Hayden's stature. What does that tell you there?
Stature, hopefully not statue.
I mean,
maybe that's why they cut him.
Maybe that's why they're cutting him. He's a statue. Stature. What does that tell you?
It tells you they just don't think Joe Hayden's a player anymore. I mean, it's plain and simple. If you watched Joe Hayden last year, there was some questions about his play.
Groin injuries last year, concussion issues. There's some people that say he can't run anymore. What's he worth per year now? He's not going to make $11 million this year, but he's going to get $4 million from the Browns. How much more is he worth, and how many teams are out there going to be willing to pay it? I understand my timeline's going absolutely batshit crazy right now, if you will. Excuse my French. Everybody and their brother has signed Joe Hayden. The thing is with him is if you did sign him, it would have to be a multi-year deal. You're going to have to give him a signing bonus and a very
low. Why would it have to be a multi-year deal?
I mean, are you going to really sign him to a one-year, $5 million deal or whatnot? I mean, do you think you can get him for less than that?
I don't know. I don't know what the market is for him out there. Yeah, I mean, look, maybe it's a two-year, you know, would you – okay, so just let me get the offset language out there for people so they understand it. So he has a $4 million offset in his contract this year. That means anything he gets as a base salary, the up to $4 million, offsets what the Browns have to pay. So unless he gets $4.1 million base salary, there's no incentive for him to get a higher first-year base salary. So he can take it in signing bonus and second-year money if that's the case. So, that part of it, you know, kind of comes into play for a team that wants to sign him, and maybe goes to your point, Dave, like do you sign him to a two-year deal? But look, if he wants to play, I don't know if he would take a one-year, $5 million deal, but wouldn't be, you know, a $4 million deal with a $1 million sign however you want. The Steelers would only have to pay $1 million to do that, get him to sign. It will be interesting. I really don't know what this number is going to be.
Would you sign him?
Would I sign him to a one-year deal where it costs me $1 million? I would. I'd go look at the tape. You know what? Honestly, if I think Cam Sutton's any good.
Yeah, but you're not going to get him for $1 million. There'll be other teams willing to pay him more than that.
That's what I just said. I could get him for $1 million, I still might not do it. I mean, I want to really study the tape. I've watched a lot of Joe Hayden. He wasn't good last year. So if I think Cam Sutton's any good, I'd probably, you know, if I have to pay more than $1 million or do more than a 1 year, I probably wouldn't do it.
Yeah, look, I mean, I understand. People just, you know, people see cornerback and Joe Hayden and look at Ross Cockrell and Cody Sensabaugh, and they say, well, that's a simple solution right there. Well, there's the money involved too, you know. I think that's the biggest thing here. If Joe Hayden would only take $1 million to sign with the Steelers, you know, probably bring his butt in and see what he can do. But the thing is that you're still talking about money involved here with Joe Hayden. I think another team's going to be able to pony up a lot more than the Steelers. Look, the Steelers have not gone out and gotten a guy like Darrell Revis. And look, Darrell Revis' tape last year was a lot worse than Joe Hayden's tape was last year. But I mean, do you really bring in a guy from the outside? You know, and pay him $4 or $5 million a season.
So let me be clear. I don't think I was clear about some of the offset here. If the Steelers sign him to a $5 million deal, it costs the Steelers, you know, $5 million. It takes the Browns off the hook. The Steelers are still paying the money. So the question is, will Joe Hayden sign for a 2 year, $6 million deal, where that's the first year he gets vet minimum money. He gets a $2 million signing bonus, and next year he gets, you know, $3 or $4 million. Now, that costs the Steelers nothing this year except the $2 million up front, and let's say the second year is not guaranteed. So let's say you could structure something like that. So that means Joe Hayden would be getting $6 million, you know, almost $7 million this year, because the Browns are four is guaranteed. And then he's, you know, you get a freebie look at next year. So would you do it for that kind of money, for like – 2.5 this year, or 2.75 this year with no guarantee on the second year with, you know, a $4 million option or something?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose you can consider it that way. I just think that there's going to be, you know, if you're talking about a bidding war here, that is just one that the Steelers are going to lose, you know?
Right. The 32 teams, the odds that the Steelers are going to be the one out of 32 are highly unlikely. But the important thing here is this isn't a draft or anything else. Joe Hayden's going to get to pick and choose. So he might take – because he's getting $4 million guaranteed from the Browns, he might take a little bit of less money to play where he wants to play. Now, I have no idea where he wants to play, but, you know, that could be a factor.
You know, I understand everybody – you know, it becomes a cost move, you know, and remember that this team still, I mean, it's got a lot of cap space right now. And you know, the good thing is Vance McDonald's not going to eat up a lot of that. And you're going to sign a guy like Stephon Tuitt here probably within the next week. And, you know, that's going to eat some of your cap, but you're still going to have cap space, here, a little bit of it. You know, you want to go into the season with $3.5 million probably in reserves in case of injuries, but, You can make something, you know, probably work with Joe Hayden, especially if it was a 2-year deal, for sure. So, you know, we'll see. You know, we'll see what the Steelers do with this. You know, the thing is that there's, you know, as you mentioned, there's 30 other teams out there, and you know, I think his former Browns defensive coordinator is in San Francisco now. You can definitely see something happening there. The Saints, you could probably see something happening there. As Adam Schefter, you know, tweeted out, you know, immediately after Joe Hayden was released, that there's tons of interest in Joe Hayden. He will have a new deal with another team by tomorrow afternoon, and it's really not hard to imagine with the season right around the corner right now that Joe Hayden, you know, barring him not being able to pass a physical, is going to be out of work long.
I agree. All right, Dave, we got to take a quick break. We'll come back and talk some Bengals. That sound good?
Absolutely. Let's do it.
All right, we'll have Paul Denner Jr. coming up next. Okay, welcome back. And we've gone through the Vance McDonald trade, and we've gone through Joe Hayden and free agency, and we're trying to structure a deal that might make sense for the Steelers, but obviously unlikely that he's going to be here. Pleased to be joined now, as last week we talked about the Baltimore Ravens, and of course, in next week we'll get into the Browns, the Steelers' week one opponent, but in our AFC North preview here, Paul Danner Jr., who's been with us multiple times on the Terrible Podcast, Bengals beat writer, covers the Bengals for the Cincinnati Inquirer and Cincinnati.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Paul Danner Jr., which we'll spell it for you one time, at PaulDehnerJr. So check him out. Paul, as always, thanks for being with us on the Terrible Podcast.
Great to be back.
So, Paul, let's start with a Bengals team that's, you know, this core group of players, 2011-12 group of players, Andy Dalton, you know, we could just go through the whole list, A.J. Green, et cetera. It's there. For the first time, they didn't make the playoffs last year. They went 6-9-1. There have been some offseason changes, but, they, you know, added two big pieces in the draft, in Ross and Mixon. Ross, obviously, the guy who shattered the record in the 40, the combine at receiver. Mixon, the controversial running back who might be, you know, one of the top five best players in this draft. When the, you know, sitting here right now, you know, a week away from the season opener, how do the Bengals look to you?
They look young. They look young for the first time since some of those early years. They were sort of this new emerging group. The thing that kind of gets lost, you know, you mentioned the 2011, that was the big reboot. Everything got back on the right track, but the reason it did was those drafts, 9, 10, 11, and then 12 as well, were really home run drafts for the Bengals. They were hitting guys late, they were hitting guys early, they were finding undrafted gems. You know, it was Geno Atkins in the fourth, it was Carlos Dunlap in the second, it was going Green, Dalton, 1 and 2. It was hitting Marvin Jones in the fifth and George Loka in the fifth. And it was, they were just hitting home run draft after home run draft. Well, what we found, and I think what eventually led to 6-9-1, was the last few drafts have not hit, at least not yet. And a lot of that was because of, well, lack of opportunity, because those guys, those veterans, held those spots and they weren't able to really get playing time. We've seen that a little bit with a few players. Have put high chips on. But now the old has been cleared out and the young have been given a chance. And the Bengals had a trap with 11 picks this past year on top of a one last year where two of their top picks, their first-round pick, William Jackson III, and their fourth-round pick, Andrew Billings,
right,
did not play a snap. So they basically had 13 first-year players on, and most of the, you know, most of them are first four-round type of guys that are all being shoved into the mix, and they've all played well. They've all looked good. You see the potential. You see what they could be, but this is going to be a young team, a young Bengals team for the first time in a while. They have for so long relied on that, on a big core of veterans. Well, now it's sort of a youth movement. And so it's hard to really get a good feel for how good they're going to be. I can tell you, knowing this league, it's going to take some time. You can't have that much youth and suddenly be, you know, winning division titles immediately. But I do think you can definitely see them moving in a different direction from what was clearly a trend backward last year.
What was the biggest offseason move, non-draft related, either a loss or a signing?
Yeah, I mean, it was what's happened at the offensive line position.
Yeah.
And that's really going to be the defining area of the 2017 Bengals. They let Andrew Whitworth go. I won't say they let him go. They didn't sign him to a massive contract at 35. They said, look, we love Andrew Whitworth, but we're not going to give 3 years and $36 million to a 35-year-old left tackle, even though he's been great and even though he really is still pretty great. They just weren't going to do that when they had drafted Cedric Ogbuehi in the first round 2 years ago. They let Kevin Zeitler go because they said, we're not going to pay $60 million to a guard. They don't value the position like that, so they let him go. And you can have those principles, and that's fine, but that doesn't change the fact that a line that gave up 41 sacks last year just gave up its two best players. And so now you have – it's all been placed, sort of like I mentioned in the beginning, behind rookies or young players that have been stuck behind others and not really had experience. Cedric Ogbuehi is the left tackle. Jake Fisher is the right tackle. In the 2015 draft, they drafted Ogbuehi first and Fisher in the second round, knowing that this was the plan. But they did not expect the plan to involve Cedric Ogbuehi being a complete dumpster fire last year and getting benched midseason at right tackle. So that, you know, it really makes it a tough spot for them, but they decided to go with it and believe that he can still be the guy. So take that, and you've got a undrafted player from 2014 who has one career active game. Not start, one game he's been active. Trey Hopkins is your starting right guard. So there you go. They're lined up there week one, and they have the weapons elsewhere. If the line can be serviceable, I think that they can challenge Pittsburgh in this division. But I don't know that that's realistic.
Boy, you really you stole my thunder there, Paul, because I was going to ask you, more along the lines of, yeah, you look at this Bengals offense. They have – everybody knows the names. They got some offensive firepower there in A.J. Green, of course, Tyler Eifert. The running back's probably going to be a little bit by committee at first to start. And, of course, you add in guys like Tyler Boyd and LaFell had a decent season last year, and then the speedster John Ross, who's going to probably take a little while to get integrated. Is Andy Dalton going to have enough time? Is this going to be a more rhythmic passing game as opposed to being able to stretch the football field this year because of that line?
You know, that's the one thing that plays to Dalton's advantage. You know, there's a lot of weaknesses that you can nitpick on Dalton's game. The one that isn't is how quickly he makes decisions and gets the ball out. I always used to laugh at, you know, it was every year at the top of the Pro Football Focus would rank quickest snap to throw in the league, and it would always be three guys, Peyton Manning and Tom Brady and Andy Dalton. It's like one of these things is not like the other, but it's the one thing that he does as well as anybody in the game is see what the play is going to be, make a decision, quick hands to get it out, and use that. The Bengals are going to use that more than ever this year. To try to scheme around this line, particularly early until they get a better feel for how good or bad they are. And that's part of what guys like Mixon and Ross are there to do. They're there to take the ball and be able to take it to the house without necessarily having to get a bunch of time to run it or just let guys go run underneath it. And they're going to try to make plays that way. So it's an interesting dynamic. The offense is going to look different because they've got to kind of scheme it around figuring out how good this offense is. Dalton has been pretty good at that. But, yeah, I wouldn't expect any seven-step drops and Ben Roethlisberger-style scrambles happening anytime in the near future in the game plan.
When you look at this running back position here, it's too bad Cedric Pierman. I read the news on him. What a great special teams player he is, and now lost for the season there. But he probably was on the outside looking in anyway. You got a mix and match of different types of backs. I mean, can't all three of those guys, talking about Jeremy Hill, Giovanni Bernard, and Joe Mixon, all kind of survive in on offense? Is there enough footballs there to kind of go around to give each a certain role there? Or could we see a guy like Hill or Bernard, elsewhere?
Yeah, no, I don't think they're going to go elsewhere. I think these are the guys for the season, these three. It's a great question you pose. It's one that we pose. It's one that I don't know that they totally know the answer to yet. And that is if three back rotation is the best way to go. Is three too many? It might be. I think they need to have pretty clearly defined roles. I think they want to ease Mixon in at least a little bit. But to be honest, guys, you're talking strictly on the football, incredible. He is every bit as good as advertised as a football player. I mean, his speed, his explosion, his stop start has a little bit of Le'Veon Bell to it. He's got that patience. He's got good vision. I mean, he runs a 4.4 at 228 pounds, and he's really, squirrely going through there. He's really tough to bring down. And so I don't know how long this team can hold him back until they realize he's just so clearly a better running back than Jeremy Hill that I don't know how long you say, okay, he's a rookie, we owe Hill this opportunity. I don't know how long they can do that. To me, where the end game will be, it's just a matter of how long it takes to get there. Giovanni Bernard is going to continue to be your third down back. He's great at that. He's a good blocker. He's fantastic in space with screens and dynamic. You guys have seen him play plenty. Jeremy Hill, I think, is going to be the goal line back eventually. I think he has shown he has a nose for the end zone. He's a big power guy down there. And Joe Mixon's going to be everything else because he's just too good. I don't think they can afford to go through the season without giving him 15 touches a game in some way.
Yeah, I always felt like they underused Giovanni against the Steelers. I mean, he always torched them. I was always curious why, particularly the last two seasons, why, Marvin wasn't getting him the ball more. I feel like we could do this for an hour, Paul. We'll try to, move it a little bit more quickly. Give us a couple guys in camp. You hit on Mixon. Steeler fans are interested in Tyler Boyd and his development. I've read some conflicting things about John Ross, the first round pick. One, that, the Bengals have their three guys. Brandon LaFell is a perfect number two complement to AJ Green and what he brings to the table. And Tyler Boyd's going to be the slot guy. So John Ross might not see the field all that much this year. What are your thoughts on that? And then if you could give us some thoughts on Carl Lawson on the other side of the ball, the fourth round pick out of Auburn, because he's a guy that, we spent a lot of time studying pre-draft to see where he would go and what he's looked like.
Yeah, John Ross is going to be interesting. I mean, he's so dynamic with his speed that, they want to find ways to use him. I think it'll start in the beginning of the year with they'll create packages, they'll create plays with him. He just made his first appearance on Sunday against the Redskins because he had still been kind of, they've been easing him back from offseason shoulder surgery that he had. And they got him some snaps there. And, they want to create packages for him. And I think at some point, that will grow. They'll give him a little bit. I could see him overthrowing LaFell by the end of the season. I could see him being forced into action at some point at LaFell or Boyd or A.K. Green again goes down. I think it's not a crazy thing to think that could happen. And considering the chip they put on, considering what he can do just running deep, just running go balls, they're gonna give him a shot to go out there and be a game breaker like he could be. Lawson has been probably the talk of camp and the talk of this team. He's no one's been able to block him. He's got incredible bend and speed around the edge. He's got speed to power, too. He's not just an edge guy. And the Bengals have really not had that in recent years. They've had these big, burly defensive ends like Michael Johnson and Carlos Dunlap running 6'7", 6'6", 290 pounds. They've not had the speed edge guy. That is really what this game is now. I mean, you have to have that. They've been searching for it. I think they found it. And they're going to use him a lot. He's going to be your nickel edge rusher for the most part. He's playing linebacker, but he's going to go dip his hand down in the dirt and drop back and be able to do all those versatile things. Guys, he went out against Trent Williams, Washington, five-time Pro Bowler, and whipped him for a half.
That bull rush was nasty.
Yeah, it was. He had a sack. He forced a holding penalty, and then he had the bull rush that pushed Colt McCoy back into Jordan Willis coming around the other end, where he blew McCoy up for a sack fumble. Lawson's the real deal. He's going to be out there a lot, and they hope that he can really change the game for their pass rush, which has really been, honestly, guys, their pass rush has been lacking the last few years.
Andrew Billings is a guy that I watched a lot of tape on ahead of last year's draft. Was surprised he went as late as he did. Obviously healthy enough from that knee injury now. Is he looking like he's going to be the real deal? Should we see him in the starting lineup midseason?
Yeah, you may see him in the starting lineup early. Definitely probably the first time that the Steelers and Bengals get together. I mean, he may start the opener. He's a big, powerful guy. He takes on double teams. You know, he's really been Domantopeko for a while and was let go and signed in Denver because Andrew Billings is here and can do the exact same thing. He's going to take on those extra blockers, stuff the run, and clear space for Geno Atkins to do what Geno Atkins does. And so, you know, he's been pretty good at that thus far. It's tough to tell in a limited amount of time how ready he is. But, I would not be shocked at all if he was the starter in the opener.
Paul, let's close it with one on Vontaze Burfict. Obviously, we all know how talented he is, and we all know the rest of the package as well. This five-game suspension, look, this might not even have hit the radar if it was any other player. It wasn't flagged in the game. It doesn't look good. You can make the argument. Is this going to end up being just reduced to a 2 or 3 game suspension? What's the thought around Bengals camp? What do you think of the hit?
The thought around the Bengals camp, the Bengals coaches and team, the stance that they have taken is this should be zero. This is not a thing, that this is a legal play that he made. That's their contention. They issued a statement the moment the news broke, stating that this is wrong, the NFL is wrong. You know, everybody makes a big deal when Robert Kraft is mad at Roger Goodell or Jerry Jones is mad at Roger Goodell. Nobody really cares when Mike Brown is mad at Roger Goodell, it seems. But this was the same type of reaction that we've seen from other teams in this league to suspensions, just because they're alarmed by why they happen and just the randomness of how they happen. And that's what the Bengals feel is the case. They're pointing the finger back at the NFL saying, you're wrong. This is a legal play, and he shouldn't be flagged for it. Now, that's for debate. I mean, the ball is directly over his head. The ball is out. He's still just 2.5 yards away from Anthony Sherman and takes a couple steps and goes up into him. You know, I think you absolutely see why people think it's a cheap shot. It looks like a cheap shot at the very least. Whether it's legal or not, it looks cheap. That we'll see what happens. Honestly, you know, I don't know. I don't know. To predict the NFL in these matters is an impossibility. They're completely irrational for the most part as far as trying to follow any patterns. So we'll see what happens. I don't know. I know the Bengals camp thinks it should be zero.
One real quick one from me, Paul. Who is the best player right now on the Bengals 90-man roster that's not going to make the 53?
That's a good question. There's a chance that defensive end Will Clark gets cut. He's a Pittsburgh guy. He's from that area over there, and he's in his fourth year. I mean, a really nice, great guy, but has struggled to make contributions. And they've had a lot of young players. I mentioned a few of them earlier on that defensive line that have really shown well. And it's sort of pushing the back end of that room out. He could be one. And honestly, guys, you may joke, I think their kicker, Jake Elliott, assuming they give the job to Randy Bullock, who has been phenomenal in the kicking competition this year. They let Mike Dugent go. They spent a fifth-round pick on Jake Elliott out of Memphis. He was the first kicker selected in the draft. And for the most part, he's lived up to it. He's had a couple bad days in practice in the scrimmage. He missed a 45-yarder on Sunday against Washington. I think that's going to doom him. But for the most part, he's a pretty good kicker. And we've seen what goes on around this league with kickers, where they can be, shoveled in and out at any point. Jake Elliott's going to land on the team this year. He's probably going to win some people some games.
Hey, Paul, great stuff. Appreciate the time. Enjoy the Labor Day weekend, and we'll look forward to talking to you when these two teams get together down the road.
Sounds great. Always enjoy it, guys.
Okay, Paul Danner Jr., Cincinnati Inquirer, Cincinnati.com. Check him out on Twitter at his name. We'll be back. We'll wrap things up. Okay, Dave, good stuff from Paul. That was we could have gone another half hour just doing a Bengals preseason preview.
We could have made this a Joe Hayden podcast, probably.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Twitter is fast and furious with all the different options for Hayden. The only way the Steelers win this is if Joe Hayden says, I've never won anything. I want to go play for a team that's going to win. I'll take a little less money because the Browns are paying me $4 million this year. So I want to go play with the Steelers. That's how it's going to work.
And you obviously cut William Gay when you signed Joe Hayden, right?
I think that's the right answer, Dave. I really do. You're not cutting Cockrell or Sensabaugh. Their upside's better. You can take care of the slot with a variety of different guys. So I hadn't really thought that through, but I think that's the right answer.
That saves
you money, right? That saves you how much?
Yeah, save you a little bit there. Being quite honest with you, Ross Cockrell doesn't give you much on special teams. He might be the odd man out.
It could be Cockrell.
Much like the tight end argument there, you can probably make a good argument to cut Cockrell and several of these guys back there in the quarterback of the Steelers to sign Hayden. I don't think it's going to happen, but obviously if it does, we'll have a lot to talk about.
Yeah, well, that was fun today. Lots of good stuff. Obviously, there is a game tomorrow night. I'm not going to be out of town. I'm not even sure I'll be able to watch it, but I will try. I'm going to be out, so it may be Alex sitting in the chair on Friday for me. I will certainly be back Monday as we get ready for week one with the Browns. But, Dave, if I don't speak to you and our listeners on Friday, have a great, safe Labor Day weekend. Enjoy it. And this was good fun as always.
Absolutely it was. I always enjoy these right before the start of the season podcast here. Okay, folks, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what you hear and you want to donate to the cause, go to SteelersDepot.com. Hit that donate button, upper right navigational bar. Happy holiday!
Well, you'll get them again Friday. Enjoy the game. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.